step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 698. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined once again by my amazing co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro. Say that again.
Hello.
I had your microphone off. You were listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Don't you ever go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, December 7th, 2022. On the show today, we have our good friends at Penfold Theater and their show Christmas Carol Radio Classic Radio Cast. And later we're going to be talking to Street Corner Arts and their show The Gulf. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Madison, Wisconsin, and Buffalo, New York. Stick around.
Go in style, Craiglin Rose, your store-bought woman, but you make me sing like a guitar humming.
Climb onto me. That's the song. That's the music of my people.
Listen, I love that. And
that's the stuff
and
I grew up with.
I know.
White
I just asked
land.
You. Did you see the video from opening night? You said no. And Carl shaking his head. Yes, yes. There was a. Opening night
hold on,
video.
Before, hold that thought for a second. Since Carl has seen it, I need to introduce Carl and the other people here so they can join in this conversation.
Oh, the disembodied voices. Yes,
the random voices we here. Don't that's want fine.
That.
That's
so
fine.
Carl Gonzalez, who our listeners are very familiar with, welcome, Carl.
Hi.
Not co-hosting today, but you're a guest.
No,
I know.
I like that we're here together.
I know. It's like I could never be. It's like if you and I are in the same room, Nicole. It's like it's incredible because I'm usually over there and having to work with. Pointing finger at the host sometime, but I kid.
And we also have Ivan Lozano. Hi, Ivan.
Hi.
Hello.
Happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. Okay, so talk about this video.
So there's this is the new Neil Diamond musical.
Entitled A Beautiful Noise, which
yes.
opened this week.
Yes, and at opening night, Neil Diamond was there watching this, and he stood up and sang Sweet Caroline, and the whole cast was on stage, and by the time it got to the bump, 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 the whole audience was going nuts, and he stepped down since he has Parkinson's disease. He hasn't performed in like 6 years
Which
now.
Which I didn't realize until today when I was reading an article about him.
I didn't realize that either.
Well, honestly. He sounded and looked great, and you could see him just having a moment. And my brother and I were like, that's one of those moments you wish you were in the theater because it's just the connection between the cast, the audience, the man who wrote this music and lived this life. It was just one of those really cool moments. It was special.
I was never a huge fan of Neil Diamond. I think it just kind of missed me. But that moment, I was just like, okay, that's a moment right there. That's beautiful.
Ivan, do you know Neil Diamond?
I don't actually. And I
had
a
feeling.
Hearing about that video.
Everyone around the world. We're coming to America.
Boy, I tell you, I wish the video were playing today to
oh my
see
gosh.
That.
Before, I love me some Neil
all right,
Diamonds.
So let's hold on Neil Diamond for just a little second because we missed the whole intro of thanking Kim Simpson for another wonderful international folk bazaar.
Very much so. And we got to hang out with him a little bit today on top of it,
we
too.
Did. And actually, we had our co-op meeting at Ground Floor Theater on Monday, and he was there as well. We got to hang out with him.
Kim's always spinning some good stuff.
Thanks for that. I also didn't get to welcome you back. It's been a while since you've been here.
Thank you.
We've had to deal with subpar co-hosts.
Oh,
thank you.
That's not nice.
Don't talk about Tony Knight like that, please.
No, we've had a lot of co-hosts, but and I think the co-host extraordinaire over the past several months has been Carl. He's been joining
me quite a bit.
I agree.
So anyway, we did talk about Neil Diamond and his Beautiful Noise, which opened last week, and not so great reviews.
Yeah.
The
I could see that. Yeah.
The The aggregator, did they like it? Of the, hold on, they're going to make me do math here. 15 reviews total. One was positive, 6 were middle, and 8 were negative.
Wow.
I know. So I'm just going to read the Did They Like It review. Oh, my God. Written by, hold on. They never put the...
one of the people who works there.
Yeah, but I can do it. Juan Michael Porter II said, using therapy as a framing for a musical play is a theatrical cheat. In such instances, rather than develop nuanced motivations or put effort into finessing a resolution, playwrights telegraph that their characters are working through trauma and are being forgiven for anything they say or do, no matter how boring or formulaic. And that was the first paragraph of his review. So it just sort of goes on from there. Yeah. All right.
That's a lot to digest there.
Yeah. This was directed by Michael Mayer, and he said, Juan Michael Porter once again, quote, through the framing, though the framing is cheap and obvious, director Michael Mayer uses it to make some entertaining choices, such as blackouts and quick costume changes during the stalled therapy sessions to denote changes in time, or by having the ensemble of characters step forward from behind Diamond's chair, possibly through a trapdoor or blackout curtain, to indicate that they are spinning directly from his memories. What is less successful is Stephen Hoggett's choreography. So, yeah. No, that could. And then, of course, he made mention of the predominantly white and... elderly, 60 to 70 year old audience all around, which is your basic audience for Broadway anyway.
I was about to say, I'm like, that's not out
of
the ordinary.
But I think for a Neil Diamond who has an older, whiter audience to begin with.
It's a Neil Diamond crowd.
Yeah, it's a Neil Diamond crowd.
That's what I was thinking. At first, I'm like, well, it is a Neil Diamond crowd. And then you add the Broadway statistics to it. That doesn't seem...
out of the ordinary.
So out of
yeah.
it. Just exactly.
Yep. So I have an album, of Neil Diamond's called Taproot Manuscript, which one day I should come and play a little bit of it, but it's, one side has got songs that we know like Cracklin' Rosie, but on the other side is all this African music that he does.
He has some really crazy B-sides of stuff mm-hmm. that is just totally not what you expect from him.
Ivan, do you know what I mean when I say one side and the other side?
I'm assuming you're talking about vinyl.
Vinyl, right? Yes. Yeah. Except we didn't call it vinyl back then because it's just what we had.
Yeah.
We didn't have anything else.
What did you call it?
Records.
A record.
Oh, okay. I thought that was like another word that I didn't know.
No, you had records or you had 45s and you had 78s.
Mm-hmm. It's the speed. You remember the mini ones? And then to fit in between the 45s and the 78s, you had to
singles.
Get the little plastic piece to pop in
now,
the middle.
No, 78s had the little one.
Remember, you had to get
yeah,
the
but that's just for the 45s. Yeah,
well, I know remember? What a 45, I never heard of a 78, though.
78s like. Is older, like my parents had 78s, and they were called unbreakable, mm-hmm. and they were so fragile, they broke just by
like,
looking
at they were
at them.
Like glass.
Oh, okay.
But they were glass, but...
Other reviews of this show...
Today, back in time with the old Tins, Lisa and Nicole... in the days of spinning the tunes.
Other critics, Brittany Samuels of Broadway News said, pseudo-memoir wagers on nostalgia and a charming frontman to keep good times feeling good. Ultimately, it's a losing bet. I should say that Will Swenson played the title role.
I was just about to say, wasn't it the Will?
Deadline's Greg Evans said...
One Mr. Audra McDonald, if you...
Deadline's Greg Evans said...
There.
Right, I'm going to try this a third time. Ready? Deadline, Greg Evans said, yeah, you got it. A by-the-numbers jukebox bio-musical that lacks the necessary galvanizing, dramatically intriguing central force. And it just goes on from there. I'm not going to say anymore. I'm done.
I mean, if I went, I would expect to hear some Neil Diamond tunes and bop in my chair. I'm not really looking for more than that when I go to see a Neil Diamond musical.
I do love me some Neil Diamond tunes, but that shows my age and my race. Just by that mere statement, you know that I'm a boomer. I'm more than likely a white boomer. More than likely.
I didn't say I was at the top of my list to see, but
I didn't.
I'm just saying, like, if I went, that's what I would expect.
Well, another opening on the other side with 10 thumbs up and 0 thumbs down is the play Ain't No Mo. And let me just read the description. This is... It says, Ain't No Mo dares to ask the incendiary question. What if the U.S. government offered black Americans one-way plane tickets to Africa? The answer is the high-octane new comedy from the mischievous mind of playwright Jordan E. Cooper. Moving faster than a transatlantic plane, this unprecedented, unpredictable comedy speeds through the turbulent skies of being black in today's America. This looks amazing.
It does look really awesome sauce.
Yeah, and so, as you said, it was written by Jordan E. Cooper. And I'm reading the Elizabeth Vincentelli review, and I probably shouldn't have chosen that one because she tends to just make synopsises, which is what she did.
she does do that.
But look at these pictures of this. It looks really nice and colorful.
That looks beautiful.
Vibrant. It's like very, very vibrant. Yeah. Eye candy vibrant.
Yeah. So it just looks like look at another one. Folks, you can see these pictures by going to offstageonair.com and clicking to the links.
And it's just enough smoke there for you, wasn't it?
Well, there was probably the way this smoke is in this picture, there was probably a reason for it to be there other than to show the beams of light. So some of the reviewers, Brittany Samuel of Broadway News said Jordan E. Cooper's rambunctious masterwork, Ain't No Mo, cutting social satire like this abounds. Words fail to describe a show so spiritual that it takes flight. New York News' Chris Jones, all the ensemble performers here are superb. Robert Hoffler of The Wrap said Stevie Walker Webb's direction makes repeated and awesome leaps, but he and Cooper, who's the writer, are equally good at depicting life between satiric extremes. And then finally, Naveen Kumar of Variety said, explosive as a hand grenade of laughing gas. It's heady and hysterical and fearlessly provocative.
I like that.
That makes me want to see that.
It's very nice wordsmithing there, sir. There, thank you.
What theater did that open in? I can't remember if you told
me. Samuel Friedman, I think. Maybe. I just closed the thing and I don't
remember. Oh, it's fine. We can look it up.
Go to didthelikeit.com. So K-pop, which opened last week, has already posted its closing notice.
Yes. I saw that. The 11th,
but it's also got a cast album coming out in February on February 24th, and it had a whole bunch of stuff going on outside. They just announced that they're closing today, but they also had, did you see the, so Jesse Green gave it a negative review, and the producers wrote an open letter to Jesse Green.
Some of the cast, too, accusing him of
writing a racist review. And then the New York Times editorial staff looked at it and said, not racist. And they stood by it, saying he's entitled to his opinion. It was very, very interesting. The letter...
They asked for an apology, also.
They asked for an apology, which they did not get. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I did not read the letter word for word, but I was listening to some people talking about it on a podcast and read a lot of it on the air. It seemed to have some points.
I mean, I think it did seem to have some points. I could totally see where, like, it was very problematic. And I also am curious on who approved it. Like, if whatever New York Times editors were like, hey, you know, this is okay. This isn't racist. What race were they? You know.
Well, it's the New York Times, so they're white.
Yeah. So.
And their editorial board, you know, said that they didn't feel that there was any racism in it. Excuse me. In hindsight, as well. So, Jesse Green has always been problematic for me.
I was like, Jesse's never been your favorite person. Mm-mm,
no. And I do think, and I've said this before, probably a million times, when they replaced Isherwood, they missed an opportunity to replace, you know, to not hire another white man.
Mm-hmm. I will say this, long before that all came out, they weren't selling houses either, and tickets were going for $30.
Correct.
I don't think the whole Jesse thing was a good thing or helped anything, but I also need to put out that it was having...
It did not close the show. The show was having problems before.
It was a lot of mitigating factors.
So there was just a lot
which is sad, and I think it's actually something Jesse mentioned, ironically, but I've heard this first run at the show in 2017 when they first mounted it was so much, had so much more meat to it than what is now transpiring. I still think you have the amazing performances, but I think like the actual context of everything. So I don't know. I didn't see either one to tell you.
Yeah.
When it closes, it will have played 44 previews and 17 performances.
And then I did see everyone online arguing, shows don't ever close that fast. And I'm like, welcome to the history of Broadway, shall we? Like, it was interesting.
I was like, that's a lie. Shows close that all the time.
It was like to read these threads and people pulling out shows you forgot about. It's actually been kind of, I guess, fascinating and a learning experience, and well, bringing up other shows. And
what's the book?
We talked about it. Yeah, and I can't think of the name of it either.
What's the show? Carrie the Musical. It's about Carrie the Musical is in the title. That closed. My show years? Closed in three performances. Merrily We Roll Along, I think, closed after 10 performances or somewhere around there. So speaking of closing,
I do think their album will do very well.
I think so as well.
Yeah,
so
easily.
We will play it here on the air. After 29 years, Stomp is closing.
It's not bananas.
Yeah, it's bananas. And I didn't realize it opened in 1994, which
is
the year.
Bang nanas, because they bang on things. Yeah. Thank
you.
Thank
you for explaining. You know, never mind. anyway, I didn't realize it opened in 1994 because that was the year I moved away from New York, and it was
It opened. I lived in the West Village, not far from where they opened it, and was living there when it opened.
But they are closing because of declining ticket sales. So, does anybody want to take a guess of how many performances they had?
Ooh.
And I'll make it easy for you. We're not including previews. This is just actual regular performances.
Over 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
29 carry the two.
Remember COVID years closing down a bit.
Oh, okay.
34,000 performances.
34?
I don't know.
Okay, you went over. It was 11,472.
I went over a lot.
Interesting.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing.
It's kind of, I've seen it touring, and then I've seen it in New York. That space is so small and intimate. It's kind of fantastical and mind-boggling.
Yeah, I never saw it in New York.
Yeah.
Did I mention
I've never seen it, period. So.
Oh, it's fun.
It's fun. It's really, really just, it gets your senses going.
Awesome.
So there's also, I'm surprised I didn't know about this. It's called Here's to the Ladies Who Lunch.
It's about you and me.
It's done by the Broadway Women's Alliance, and it's a six episode miniseries about women in the theater that are not the actors, but the stage managers, the producers, all the people backstage.
The peeps making it happen,
and how they dealt with the COVID shutdown. So here's a little piece from the trailer of it that y'all can listen to.
This is the story of the women of Broadway, filmed over 4 months across 5 time zones, 2 continents, covering the expanse of the unbelievable highs and lows of this global pandemic.
I was at the 42nd Street Studio.
In our office.
In audition.
First day of
tech. Off in Los Angeles. We were still performing that night on Broadway. And when I landed, the theater was...
So that's something now it's YouTube, so anybody can see it. And I'm gonna check it out. And for those of you that are listening that want to learn more about it, you can go to offstageonair.com. When I post the show, there'll be a link to that trailer, to the full trailer. It's a 2-minute trailer. And then you can see it all on YouTube. I can't wait to watch it.
No, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, it's CS.
Yes! Huh? Cool stuff, CS.
Mary, CS.
Right. Yeah.
CS.
I thought she was saying C.S, and I'm like, what?
Okay. I was saying C.S.
Okay.
It's my brother's
cool
initials.
Stuff.
Oh, it is? Mm-hmm. Oh, sweet.
It's cool stuff, too.
And this is something that, I know interest Mr. Carl Gonzalez, because we've talked about this before, and he's seen it. And that is Fat Ham.
I haven't seen it.
I thought you saw it.
No, I want to go see it. I saw Clyde.
Yeah, okay. Well, so Fat Ham is moving to Broadway. So this was the Pulitzer Prize winner that was off Broadway. And it is set to begin previews on March 21st. at the American Airlines Theater with a scheduled opening of April 12th, and is co-produced with National Black Theater. And I thought this is interesting. This is only the third time in Broadway history that a black theater company has gone to Broadway.
Really?
Wow. I mean, I'm not surprised,
I'm not surprised. And yet I'm shocked. Yeah. Yes.
Amazing. Anyway, the whole original cast off Broadway.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. That's exciting.
That is again awesome sauce. You are serving a lot of awesome sauce and news today.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of Broadway debuts, which is always good.
That's awesome sauce too.
Yeah. So, yeah, Fat Ham, Pulitzer Prize, we've talked about on the show, is kind of a Hamlet knockoff.
Hamlet, you know. They're just the same.
Pretty much.
And then there was an article in the New York Times this week about, it was entitled, Do We Need Another Romeo and Juliet? And it's an article about a Pat Benatar.
I was about to say, is Pat Benatar. Yes. So let Pat do what Pat like, let, needs let to that happen. Do.
The answer is, if it's Pat Benatar, the answer
is
yes.
Well, the reason why I wanted to talk about it here is there's the article in Times is worth the read. And it tells the story of how this particular iteration came to being. And it's kind of interesting. One of the things, the reason why the whole do we need another Romeo and Juliet to remind everybody is we just opened Anne Juliet, which is a similar thing. Mm-hmm. But this is a guy named Bradley Breadwig was listening to a Pat Benatar album and having a copy of Romeo and Juliet at the same time and noticed how the songs just chronicled the show, and he wanted to do a musical.
Did he call Pat up and say, hit me with your best shot?
Yes. He wanted to do a musical about Romeo and Juliet using Pat Benatar music, which he did. Pat Benatar found out about it and tried to, and wrote a cease and desist letter, mm-hmm. made him stop because it was unauthorized. In the meantime, she was trying to write a Romeo and Juliet coincidentally with her music. Right. That was, I believe it was meant to be, I forgot. But there was a reason why her issue didn't work. His did. She went back and asked him to come to New York and talk about it. Anyway, so it's his version.
With her
blessing.
Touching sprinkle magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, and Bradley Breadwig was the creator and showrunner of one of my favorite TV series called The Fosters.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
The Fosters. Yeah. Did you watch that?
I used to watch, when ABC Families, was that what it was on?
Yeah.
I think it was. And then it changed now, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's gone. It's over. It's gone. But there is a spinoff that I watch. It's... Anyway, but it's interesting. I would encourage folks to go to offstageonair.com and click the link on this article and read it because I found it very interesting.
It's Pat Benatar, man.
It's Pat Benatar.
And her husband, Neil. I need to give Neil credit. Neil writes and performs with her, does the guitar. So Neil is a big songwriter at all of her music. Yeah. And, hello, they were in this fantastical 2022 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, along with Dolly Parton and the Eurythmics and Duran Duran and Lionel Richie and Annie Lennox. They were part. Pat Benatar was all a part. Carly Simon. They were part of this year.
Okay, so we're gonna move forward to the Wiz.
I love music too.
I get it, yeah.
To the Wiz, which is going to be coming to Broadway in 2024 after a tour, which starts in, I think, Baltimore, somewhere in Maryland.
I believe.
And they haven't announced the other cities that it's going to go to.
I love this show.
But that's amazing. I've never seen it.
They haven't announced the cast yet either, right?
Mm-mm. They have not, but it's going to be...
They just said, it's coming. It's going to ease on down the road.
Yes, it is.
To your city.
It's going to be directed by Shel Williams and choreographed by Jaquiel Knight. Jaquiel Knight is making their... Broadway debut, and additional material is being written by Amber Ruffin.
Kind of cool and interesting.
Yeah.
I'm down. I'm totally down.
Oh, easily. I love the Wiz. So.
Cool. Well, let's take a little break and listen to Be a Lion from the original Broadway.
Yeah. Yes.
Here it is.
Good choice.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole
and
Carl
and
Ivan.
See, we're all here. What a great conversation we just had.
I like
always
it.
Always good conversation.
Always.
Always good.
People bring good conversation.
But we're going to now switch over and talk about Penfold Theater's production of A Christmas Carol classic radio cast, which opens tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
And we are fortunate enough to have the director, Mr. Carl Gonzalez, and the assistant director, Ivan Lozano. Welcome.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So every year, Penfold does a radio cast, either It's a Wonderful Life or Christmas Carol, Miracle on 34th Street. And so this carries on. So tell us about this production of A Christmas Carol. I don't know if we have to. I'm assuming people know the plot.
I hope you know the plot. If you don't, then you're going to be really surprised when you see it. I was approached to direct A Christmas Carol about a year or so ago, and I was going back and forth because I wanted to do something just a little different, just because that's kind of how I am. And I got to give...
Because you're a little different.
Just a little bit. And so I got to give my... got to give some credit to my partner, Lacey. Lisa, you need to meet Lacey one day. I think you'd really like her.
I think I'd like her. I think I would call her Lacey Cannon Gonzalez.
That's a good, yeah, great. And she was like, you should do an all-women cast. And I'm like, that's incredible. So I approached that to Penfold, and I wanted to have my cast all women. I wanted to have my creative, my crew as close to all women as possible. And luckily, they were really awesome about it. And I reached out to Ivan, and Ivan, you can talk about it too if you want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was looking for opportunities in Austin because I'm graduating. And so...
Mazel tov.
Thank you. Thank you. And yeah, so Carl asked me if I would assistant direct for him. And I, of course, said yes because, well, Carl's amazing. And then when he told me that it was... Yeah. when he told me that he was casting all women, that was just... I don't know. That sounded really exciting because I've worked on the show before, but it was just what it was. We just did the normal version. But this one was really fun because, well, I mean, I feel like I've learned a lot about these women and about how to work with different people in theater. And I've learned a lot from Carl. And I don't know. I think that being able to like find the feminine aspects of the show, too, has been very interesting.
Have you changed the gender of the characters? So is Scrooge female?
No, actually. That was a conversation that we had a while ago. I'm really fortunate that the women we have cast in the show are incredible. They've also challenged me a few times with ideas that I had that aren't there more from the male gaze. So, and I was so thankful for that because I don't think I would have been given that note or offered that grace if there wasn't a trust between all of us. And they decided like it would be interesting to just keep the genders and see how that plays with women almost telling the story / saving Scrooge, including Scrooge herself. Amber Quick.
Amber Quick, the incomparable Amber Quick. What a perfect choice for the role.
If there's five women, so how many different roles do each of them get to play? Because, I mean, there are some standard cast of characters and you know about.
So Amber only plays Scrooge, and then the rest of them play, I think, between like 4 to 3 other characters.
3 to 4 other characters.
Yeah, but some only show up maybe once or twice. So... it's pretty split up pretty evenly.
Tiny Tim.
I love it. Yes, and you've got your ghosts.
So who else is in the show? Who else is in the cast?
Sure, we have Amber Quick. We have Yunina Barber Payne.
Lovely.
We have a new up-and-coming actress, Eva McQuaid.
Maybe she'll go
somewhere. I'm not familiar with that person, but I look forward to seeing her work.
We have Michelle Alexander. And we have Bianca Torres.
Amazing. Amazing cast.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, like, that really is.
As soon as I was able to like get over my own like male ego and like really trust in the work that they were doing, yeah, it's been incredible. It has been incredible working with these five, and including Ivan. Lacey's the production manager, so you know we're in good hands.
Yep.
And it's been incredible. So
it's a radio cast. I'm assuming we're going to see basically them standing in front of microphones and performing this. And do you have a Foley artist?
Our actors are actually doing the Foley themselves.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
So yeah. Then yes, but it's the actors.
Yes. So we don't have an individual Foley artist. Okay. They're doing it.
Cool. Is there also, so a lot of times there will be a little story within the story. So that the radio cast is similar to War of the Worlds, where you saw a little bit of the drama of the actors playing it. Is any of that, or is it straight Christmas Carol?
Go for it if you want to answer.
We did talk about that before, and I think that we decided that they were just like, you know, there to tell the story, and maybe to themselves they know what that backstory is. But as far, I mean, I don't know. I'm just always in awe when I watch them.
There are a few interactions in the play that show like, oh, there's, you know, it's nothing like, you know, an extra story, but it's just fun interactions that are, I'll quote unquote, if you see, I realize I'm quoting on
air quotes work on the radio.
Air quotes work on the radio. It's just through their relationships. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. So cool. Any music or anything else you want to highlight on this production?
We get to hear three carols sung live, and it's so pretty. They're doing such a good job with it.
The actors are singing it?
Yes, they are.
Amazing.
They sound beautiful.
Acapella?
Yes.
Oh, well,
I love
great.
That stuff. I know, right? That's good stuff.
Is one of the carols dreidel, dreidel, dreidel?
Spoilers. Spoilers. Jeez. Do you want to tell them what happens to Scrooge at the end, Lisa? Jeez.
I do.
Lisa.
I do, I do.
You're ruining the story for children all over the world.
I know. Well, they should just go wallow in their figgy pudding. it sounds amazing and sounds so much fun. When do you open?
Yeah, we open tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. That is the 8th of December.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's great. And it's out at the Old Settlers Hall, is it not?
Yes, it is.
And where can folks go to get
There's
more information?
There's also some performances at the Driscoll Hotel also. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the 22nd and the 23rd, there will be performances at the Driscoll. And if you're wanting more information or tickets, penfoldtheater.org.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I cannot wait to see it, which I'll get to because it plays after my show closes.
That's exciting.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was Carl Gonzalez and Ivan Lozano of Penfold Theater and their production of A Christmas Carol Classic Radio Cast. Playing tomorrow through the 23rd of December. For more information, penfoldtheater.org. And this is music from A Christmas Carol, the one that's done at Radio City, Madison Square Gardens, that your friend Emily Skinner was in the first cast.
Yeah.
And this is the money montage.
You love nothing quite so much as gold.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
We are here.
We are here.
Making
stuff happen. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on locally. Of course, we just talked about the radio cast over there at the Penfolds.
At the Penfolds, there's lots of good theaters going on right now.
And let's see. I wanted to talk about a little bit about How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which is Broadway across America.
With Whoville.
In
Cindy
Whoville.
Who.
Yeah. I have never seen this musical. Have you?
I have. That's so funny. Todd and I were having a conversation about the Grinches and the musicals.
Yeah.
I love the Grinch.
Well, and you know what? I didn't put the dates on here.
So it's now through this Sunday, which I believe is the 13th, right? Sunday's through the 11th. So it's now through the 11th.
Well, cool. And people can get information at austin.broadway.com.
Yes, they can.
There's two in each pack. So that's cool. And then other things that are happening.
There's lots of good stuff happening.
The one-act play that goes wrong over at Austin Playhouse.
Yes.
They were guests on the show. It closes on the 18th.
Yes.
Faith Healer, I believe it's your last weekend. It closes on the 11th. Sherlock Holmes of the Archive Theater closes on the 18th. Junie B. Jones, Jingle Bells, Batman Smells is still at the Scottish Rite through the 18th. Of course, you cannot miss the last 5 years playing at the Ground Floor Theater through the 18th. And then the Archive Theater has Frostbites, a holiday cabaret, which closes on the 17th.
Yes, you forgot the Christmas Carol at Zach.
Oh, you know what? I had a typo here. Christmas Carol at Zach.
The 30th.
It runs through, this says the 21st. It runs through the 30th?
It does run through the 30th.
awesome.
How could it close before Christmas?
I don't know. I could do it.
Oh, well, maybe that's what's happening. We haven't done a cast.
So let's talk about today in theater history.
Today stuff happened.
It is the birthday of Sarah Bareilles.
Oh, well, that's a good day. Hello, yeah. Sarah. Happy and, birthday.
I skipped. I usually don't do birthdays first. So no, she got lucky, got her.
That's okay.
I do like me some Sarah Bareilles.
Yes.
But the Elephant Man, its second...
is that the one you worked on?
No, I did the original.
Oh.
Oh, no. The one I worked on was the original, but I did a tour.
Got it.
But I wasn't on Broadway, but it was the same company.
Understood.
But this was the second, and I just lost the word, revival. I lost revival.
you revived it.
That was... Yeah, bad. So that was 2014. There was a revival in 2002. And of course, the original was in 1979,
nine,
I think. 1980.
I think so, too.
How Now, Dow Jones.
How Now, Dow Jones.
How Now, Dow Jones. Opened in 1967.
Interesting.
And hold on, my things will not participate in. The Norman Conquests opened in 1975. High Fidelity in 2006, and 84 Charing Cross Road opened in 1982.
82.
Birthdays, Stephanie D'Abruzzo, Ellen Burstyn, Julie Halston, Jeffrey Wright, Ellen and Burstyn. Sarah Bareilles again.
And
she
Sarah
gets two
Bareilles
birthdays.
Again. Those are some good birthdays.
Yeah, amazing.
Bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire. So that's it for the local stuff, unless there's anything I missed that you want to bring in.
No, you were wheeling in some good stuff going on.
Well, great. Well, we will take a little break. We're going to listen to...
Oh, the Tapestry Dance has a dance this weekend.
Oh, Tapestry Dance.
Yes.
Go look at Google Tapestry Dance and you'll find out everything you need about...
Exactly.
...to know about that.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a little break and then we're going to come back and talk to our guests from Street Corner Arts. And we're going to listen to... Live a Little from How Now, Down Jones.
I love that you got something from there. I was going to wonder, but you...
Here it is.
You came through.
My guardian angel just resigned.
My ship of happiness is...
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. We had a lovely time talking to Carl Gonzalez and Ivan Lozano. And we are now going to switch gears and talk about Street Corner Arts, which does some amazing work, usually at Hyde Park Theater. And this one is no exception. It is called The Gulf. It is directed by Carlo Lorenzo Garcia. I almost changed your last name. Hi, Carlo. Welcome back.
Name change.
Wait, hold on. Now go. I turned on your microphone.
Thank you. Thank you. I almost had a name change there.
Yeah, you almost did, which is what I specialize in, as you both know.
Usually the name change is to Carlos.
Yes.
I've never called you Carlos.
You've not, Lisa, and I appreciate you for
that. But I will tell you, to be quite honest, every time I say Carlo, or most times I go, did I just not put the S in there?
No, I'm singular, not plural.
Good. And Natalie Garcia, who is in the show.
Yes, I am.
And was one of my co-stars in the show that I acted in. And I'm so excited to have her here on the show. And I didn't realize that she has not been on the show before.
I know.
I feel like you should have been.
I certainly have participated with many companies who have done spots on your show over the last few years.
They just not invited you. It must be something about you.
Mm-hmm.
So Carlo,
don't have a good enough radio face, I guess.
I have a face for radio, that's for sure.
No.
Pish posh.
Pish posh.
Don't talk.
Carlo, what is this show, The Gulf?
Yeah, The Gulf by Audrey Cephaly. It's a two-hander. It's two women.
I don't understand what two-hander means.
Oh, yeah, it's a play for two performers.
Oh, okay, got it.
And, originally... I was looking for a play for Natalie and Kelsey Mazak to be in together because I'm a big fan of their work. And finding a play with two women in their 30s, which are not, best friends or mother-daughter, like it's very hard to find plays. And I stumbled upon Audrey's play, The Gulf, which I fell in love with. And it's just about these two women who are... in a relationship. They're out in the Gulf of off of the Gulf of Mexico in a river in Alabama and
fishing
for
some good fishing.
Yeah, some good fishing there. Just exploring their relationship. We kind of find them mid relationship, past the point where people decide whether they're going to stay in a relationship or not, where you see their idiosyncrasies start to come out, and you discover that their future goals are kind of in conflict with each other.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a really beautiful play. There's a lot of humor and depth, and I really enjoyed it because it doesn't go down the route that, you know, you would come to expect from like a traditional play that deals with the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
It really focuses on the humanity of it, and it's not like there's no political bent to it. There's no family disapproval. It's just about the humanity that these two women are trying to kind of navigate this relationship.
Human
together.
Emotion and needs.
It's spectacular.
Fancy that. I love,
it's amazing.
I like
well,
that.
And that's actually, you know, when we talk about representation, when we see disenfranchised groups or underrepresented groups in like normal places, that's a marker of something good. So that's good. And Natalie, tell us about your character.
I play Kendra, who is...
Kendra Scott? Can I have some jewelry?
That might be a little ambitious for this Kendra. So Kendra is a pretty simple woman who enjoys, obviously, fishing. And
who doesn't, really?
I do.
It seems like Betty, the other character, doesn't. Not a big fan of the fishing.
We'll be on Kendra's boat.
But kind of part of... You know, the dichotomy of their relationship really rests in the fact that Kendra is pretty happy with the way things are and doesn't really like change and has a very simplistic view of what is something that would create a happy life. Just, you know, being able to sit in the fishing boat and be quiet together is kind of her main want in life. And the conflict comes into play when Betty, of course, is a little more ambitious and thinks that Kendra should dream bigger and want to do more in life. And they just have such different views on what is a successful, happy life that we kind of watch this unfold and see... There's part of me that, you know, if I were watching it, would be like, oh, please break up.
For God's sakes.
And we kind of talked about that a lot too, which is, you know, Kelsey and I really struggled with like the thought of if we were ourselves in this situation, right, would we stay? Mm. And we think it was kind of important to make the argument that probably they do.
It makes me want to know what the conflict is.
I know. Well,
I'm just saying.
And I think the conflict is, if you've been in a relationship at all, I feel like it's you've probably had this experience where you are in, you find that you've kind of run your course to a certain extent. And
what are you trying to say?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, but I feel like it's relatable in a lot of ways, regardless of who it is that you love. Like, I think that there's just so much commonality there in the story and in the text that. It's just really beautiful, and Audrey doesn't really answer the question. So I think it's up to the audience, it's up to the performers to decide that for themselves. We made a decision. Spoiler alert, but but it could go either way, and
you still don't know. I mean, despite the fact that we might have in our brains what we think
depends how good of an actor you are, whether you're able to get that out to the audience.
Some people have told me I'm okay.
You're okay.
So we'll see. We'll see.
So when was this play written? I'm not familiar with it.
I should know that question. It's relatively new. It was probably written in the last.
Sometime in the last three or four years.
Three or four years.
Yeah. Pre-pandemic, probably, but not much pre.
So I'm trying to imagine the staging. I'm putting my director hat on this thing, and this is two women fishing. I'm assuming in a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Are we sitting in the boat the whole time?
We are sitting in the boat the whole time. That is the other thing I like about it too.
That's got to be interesting to.
There's nowhere to run.
Block. It's and so use your body as an instrument, as an actor. There's a lot of whoa.
Yeah,
that's a challenge.
We're talking about like a 3.5 foot by 10 foot boat that two performers are navigating. So there's I kind of threw this out into the rehearsal process. Like we're doing a lot of micro blocking. Mm-hmm. And it's because it is a very contained space. But also, as we were kind of going through the process, I was like, man, this is very reminiscent of if you've been in a relationship during the pandemic in a very confined, like sharing a apartment together with someone in the during the pandemic. Like you have to navigate these small spaces together where things then start to intensify. You know, everything gets amplified. The annoyances get amplified, right, within that circumstance. So I think while it's not a pandemic play, I feel like it has a little bit of that in there as well. But yeah, it takes place in a boat.
Yeah, that's amazing. Cool.
And we have a real boat, which, you know, thanks, Rommel. An actual boat.
Well, why not? I mean, that would be easier than building one.
And of course, Carlo is the, he likes to wear a lot of hats, so he... you know, did the set design as well as directing, and I think he's done a beautiful job with the embellishment around the boat through which we suspend our disbelief about not actually being in the water. Yeah.
So, Carly, you mentioned earlier that you brought this piece to Street Corner Arts.
I did.
And other than the idea of finding a vehicle for two women. Why this play right now for Street Corner Arts?
Well, I'm very cognizant of our time during COVID, and I really been trying to gravitate towards smaller scripts, or not smaller scripts, but smaller cast size, because I want to kind of limit exposure as much as possible. You can do everything right, and you can still have brushes with it, but at the same
as
time,
as I believe you just learned,
yes, yes. We've learned, and but we navigate right, and I for me that was part of it, but also, you know, I think One Street Corner's arts missions has always been about shining a light on the humanity that exists, our commonalities that exist between us, regardless of who we are, who we love, what we do, and I think that this was a really it gave me a lot during this time, kind of reflecting back on the pandemic and then reflecting on kind of our own identities as who we are, and not really knowing everybody's own personal struggles, right? Like, and I think that's important for us as artists and as performers and creators to tell all the stories. And that's why, and I just loved it. I love the text. What Audrey has written is very, is just very beautiful. Yep. It's complex. It's funny.
She writes dialogue in a way that I think not a lot of playwrights can always hit that mark of the just like hyper realism, hyper naturalism of, you know, overlapping dialogue, but actually in a way that's not, oh, I'm trying to show off as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't really want to direct it, to be honest, because I was very on the fence about it, just in terms of my place in where sure. I should be as a director.
And I told him that was silly to think that way, because I think it comes down to trust, and I think it comes down to knowing the type of director that Carlo is. You know, Kelsey and I have both worked with him a lot, and... one of the hallmarks of the way that Carlo directs is really letting the actors craft their story. He's not, while he's a very hands-on director, he's not a dictatorial director, mm-hmm. which I think is so, you know, sometimes you get a director that has too many things that they want to force upon what's organically already happening. And I think in this case, like really being able to have somebody that I know was going to listen to us as we brought these characters to life was what was important to me. And yeah.
Amazing. Well, we've talked Kelsey. Are there any other designers or anybody you want to highlight that's working on the show?
Yeah. So we have Shelby Gephardt doing the lights for us. Amazing lighting designer, helped us out with that. Like Natalie mentioned, I'm doing the set design and I did the sound design. And our stage manager is Will Douglas.
Oh, lovely.
At least
a great group.
But yeah. Will's just doing, he's just going to wear all the hats.
We don't want to tell people that because I think this might have just been like a one-time thing, yeah. So favor from me.
Our stage manager's name is Bill Douglas.
Yes, he's not, and he's not for hire.
Mr. Douglas.
Mr. Douglas.
Well, it's fine.
Well, that sounds amazing. I'm hoping to get to see it. Our dates don't really make that easy, but I'm going to try to do it. Y'all are over at Hyde Park Theater.
Yes.
You have already opened.
No. We actually...
Never mind. You have not opened.
We've never opened. No.
Oh, because you...
We canceled last weekend, right. So we're moving performance dates around.
It's okay. Oh, okay. Like, I'm not embarrassed. I had COVID, so and then maybe we had to cancel opening over. Weekend.
So are you going past the 17th?
Now? We're not going past the 17th, but we are at Hyde Park Theater opening this Thursday, mm-hmm. running through December 17th. But we've added some additional shows, Monday, December 12th, Wednesday, December 14th, and a matinee performance on December 17th.
Awesome. Well, that sounds amazing. And where can folks get information about the show?
We have all of our information on our website, streetcornerarts.org.
Great. Well, Natalie and Carlo, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
for being
here.
It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you, too.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. That was Natalie Garcia and Carlo Lorenzo Garcia of Street Corner Arts production of The Gulf. Opening tomorrow, plays through the 17th. Get the schedule at streetcornerarts.org. And to go out, we're going to play A Pretty Kettle of Fish from Anne of the Green Gables.
Love it.
This is a pretty piece of business. A pretty kettle of fish.
We are back. I let that play a little bit so that people could get a little of the fishing.
A little kettle of fish.
A little kettle of fish.
A pretty kettle, sorry.
A pretty kettle of fish.
A pretty kettle of fish. I loved a fish. Do
so
you
we
like
didn't,
a fish?
My father was a fisher person, and he used to take us fishing.
I feel like
I kind of like it.
We should
but,
fish when we go to space camp on our trip.
Yeah, okay. Deal. Did you see the Frank Sinatra musical they're putting together?
I know, I wanted to get angry, but then I realized, you know, Frank seems like that would have been a no-brainer from the start with all these
BIPOC. Yeah, why would you get mad?
Musical, because it's just like, oh, another musical about with music. But then Frank seems like he would be the no-brainer why it hasn't been done before, kind of.
Yeah, so thing. I have a little bit of information
about
it.
He's an interesting man.
He was. And it's, well, it's not funny, because it's called Sinatra, obviously. And so, but, you know, there was also Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is being developed by Universal Music Group in association with Tina Sinatra, who is his daughter.
I was like, the daughter.
The daughter.
The daughter.
And it's being written by Joe DiPietro, who wrote Memphis.
Yes.
And I think this is perfect for him. He won a Tony for Memphis. And Kathleen Marshall is directing and choreographing. And I didn't realize it's been a long time since Kathleen Marshall has been represented on Broadway.
Was it Anything Goes last?
No, where'd it go? Reese is a choreographer of In Transit, which
In Transit,
I saw.
That's right.
Which wasn't very good. Well, In Transit was a sweet show for, it should have been done off Broadway. That was at Circle in the Square.
Her choreography doesn't do a lot for me. It never builds for me. It always just, it's good and it just stays there. And I'm like, are we gonna get bigger? Like, yeah. But
so
that's
here,
just, you
here's
know, that's
a quiz
me.
For you. How many Broadway shows was Frank Sinatra in?
Was he in any?
No, he was not in any.
Yeah, it was all
he
like,
never
that's
performed.
A trick question.
He never performed on Broadway except for doing a 1975 concert on...
I mean, if they're calling Bruce a Broadway star, then you might as well give it to Old Blue Eyes there.
True. Anyway, interesting. I like Sinatra's music.
Sinatra's music's very, very good.
And of course...
You know what? It's timeless.
He will sort of be represented, not directly, with New York, New York.
I was like, Candor and Ebb. Yeah. I mean, he did make a Broadway, the longest composing American Broadway duo in American history. He, you know.
True. Yeah, he'll do it. So that's it. We've done the show. And the Austin Common Radio Hour is next. John Hoffner is not here in the room, but
no,
he's
not.
He's coming into the room even as we speak.
Oh, you can see him.
But I will say that I enjoyed listening to his show before the election because I got a lot of my election
Did you get
information
some information?
By listening to the show.
He gave you election information.
John, what's on the show this week?
Well, it's funny you should say that. We have one more show on elections.
Yeah, because we have
a runoff going on right now. That makes sense there.
Yeah. Which I have to admit, I thought the runoff was yesterday, and I kept last night I kept Googling trying to find out the news of who was won, and not till next week.
Georgia yesterday.
Yeah, this is the early.
I know. I thought they were both the same day.
Yeah, no, the early voting is through this Friday, and then
I figured that
the real
out
ones
eventually.
It'll be all over next Tuesday.
Well, that's amazing. So
next Wednesday you can talk about it, Lisa.
which I will. So make sure y'all go vote. It's early voting right now. It took me less. There's the two things on the. If you have a runoff in your district, you have only two names.
Two things,
if you don't have a runoff, you just got one name.
I'm one of those runoff people all the way around.
Me too. We did it. Thanks.
Another one.
Yep. We're gonna go out with. We didn't even have time to talk about it, but a little song called Rebecca. From Rebecca Doss Musical.
She just can't stop, can she?
As a little spoiler, on the 28th, I will be hosting Kim Simpson's International Folk Bazaar, and I'm going to be doing all show tunes in foreign languages.
Oh, there is some good stuff to be had.
Well, we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
I've wanted a father, but no heart, ding duft ihr Hand. Auch wenn sie nicht mehr schlägt.